contrary to popular wishes, Mike Saunders is still not back. But never fear, he is back in exactly 55 minutes and counting, at which point we'll all go to the pub, because it's quite sunny outside, and Mike has not had a nice drink for the last 6 weeks. So, this is episode 14 of season 2 of the Tux Radar podcast. I am Paul Hudson.
I am Andrew Gregory.
Je m'appelle Graham Morrison.
And in this podcast, we are talking Gnome, Gnome and more Gnome, with the G pronounced every single time. KDE 4.5 is almost here. This goes out tomorrow, so it may in fact be here.
Yes, it should be.
Should we pretend it is here?
Well, no, because what's going to happen is it'll be delayed for a week, and then we'll look even more foolish.
We can curse it by saying it's here.
I've tried it, and it's awesome.
Plus, we have Discovery of the Week, like usual. Our hot seat, I think it's Graham's turn this week. And, of course, our open ballot, which has been very, very popular online. What one thing would you change about Linux? Don't forget, you can subscribe to the Linux format and read our words every month. Well, actually, every 4 weeks. This month, fortnight thing is quite complicated, isn't it, really? You can read our words every 4 weeks by subscribing at tuxradar.com/subscribe. Also, especially, right now we have a new issue out available, Linux Format Issue 135. The great issue is our Firefox issue. Comes with a free book, How to Learn PHP from the Very Beginning. You'll love it, because I wrote it. And with that, I think it's time for the news. Great.
Yes, it's the news. Time for the news. What's been happening the last 2 weeks? Well, we had a lovely trip in Portland. Oh, no, sorry, yes. GNOME 3.0, the widely anticipated revolutionary new desktop paradigm that's going to transform your Linux, GNU/Linux desktop into the future fest of a Minority Report-like interface has been delayed till at least March next year.
That was almost one breath, Graham.
Yes, I get very excited at the beginning, and it takes a while to relax. This, I think, primarily is because GNOME Shell has been deemed a little bit instable and not ready for prime time, despite the fact you can all download it and try it now. Probably a very sensible decision, although it's been made very late in the day. I think they should have... It's scarily like a similar scenario about 2.5 years ago with a competing desktop environment.
No.
Competing. Well, yes, that's of course no competition.
Well, the curious thing is that was it a year ago? GNOME Shell was usable.
Yeah,
you could actually download, and it was pretty cool. We were fiddling around with it.
I think they might be getting scared. Do you?
Yeah, that's the real reason. Like, oh, I'm not sure.
Where's my desktop gone? No, that is your desktop. No, it's a file manager thing.
I think this is really encouraging. They've got the strength of their convictions. They don't feel under pressure to rush anything out that doesn't
absolutely
work.
Absolutely right. I mean, GNOME is looking brilliant. The 2.3.0 release, I think it's a really fine desktop. In fact, I was watching someone transform it into an OS X-like skin on YouTube or something, and it looks remarkably like OS X when you've got all the greys over and previews in the file manager. It's a very versatile, great desktop, and they are brave to replace that default with GNOME Shell.
It's when you think about it, it's quite the opposite of KDE 4, because KDE 4 was ostensibly about making all the developer frameworks 4.0, all the new things they wanted to introduce.
Yes,
while actual user facing things were quite slim in the
absolutely
ground.
Absolutely right.
Whereas GNOME 3, they're changing hardly anything on the developer front, sadly, and changing lots of user facing stuff.
I think you're right. I think that's a good decision. I think the problem with the KDE guys is that they thought up lots of cool developer-friendly technologies, but gave very little thought to the user experience.
Well, that's all changing now that KDE 4.5's out.
Yes, well, KDE 4.5 is due out today. Who knows whether it happened? I have tried the last release candidate 3, which is out at the end of the month. What is there to say? I mean, it's steady progress. It's getting better and better. The big disappointment, which is whether it's released today or not, it won't include KMail 2. Which was the major feature for KDE 4.5. Unfortunately, that's been pushed back.
So what is the major feature of KDE 4.5?
Hold on, let me look at my notes.
It was that major, you can't remember.
Exactly. That's it.
Reworked
notifications.
Oh, right.
Which might be good, might not be good. The notification system in KDE is pretty naff in comparison to GNOME's renewed and very nice and shiny one. It finally uses Dbus, which has taken a long time.
Are you referring to the Ubuntu one?
Yes, the Ubuntu one.
I really hate that.
Do you?
Yeah, because when I press the volume key in my keyboard, it goes down, 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 down. And when it hits the bottom, it goes a little speaker with an X through it. So there's no sound. That's the point it's making. But it keeps flashing that. The key repeat keeps on pressing. It doesn't go, hey, there's no sound. It goes, hey, there's no sound. Hey, there's no sound. Hey, there's no sound. Hey, there's no sound. Again and again and again, flashing up for about 20 seconds. It's a bit annoying, actually.
That is annoying.
Thanks, Ubuntu.
The other thing is KWin has added a few minor enhancements. It's got some clever tiling, so you can put applications next to one another rather than in different parts of the screen, and awesome background blending. And WebKit. WebKit K-part for Conqueror is an optional install.
Ooh.
So,
is that the beginning of the end, perhaps?
I hope so. I don't know why it's optional. It replaces KHTML. It's in KDextraGui.
It replaces by default or replaces...
No, it's extra. You have
to... KHTML is still default.
Yep.
Not for much longer, really, is it?
Why haven't they just jumped on WebKit now? I have no idea why. I mean, even GNOME's done it, hasn't it?
Does it involve sharing code with other people?
Yeah. Admitting that... Well, anyway. Let's see. Let's see what happens when we finally get to try out the final version, which should be out by the time you hear this. If not, it's not our fault. on other GNOME-related news, we should have talked about this first. The GNOME released its census results, which is just some analysis they've done on who has worked on the various modules in the 2.3.0 release. And maybe not that much of a surprise, considering we talked about the old kernel contributors. Was it in the last episode? Because very, very similar. What is interesting, I thought, was 70% of developers say they work voluntarily on GNOME, and yet 70% of commits to the modules are by paid contributors. So 70% of volunteers make a 30% contribution, which is quite high, really, considering they're not working 9-to-5 on it.
Well, presumably those kind of commits are language things.
Yeah.
A lot of large chunk are minor fixes, whereas the paid developers working it full time. They can contribute code changes and stuff.
And also, when you work on it every day, you get very good at it. You know? the other thing is, so volunteers make 23% of the contributions in time. Red Hat, 17% of the total contributions, by far the greatest contributor to GNOME. It's almost a fifth theirs.
Also, by far the biggest Linux company in the world.
Yes, yeah. Followed by Novell at 10%. This was interesting. There are various consultancies in the top 10, and the highest one is Collabora, which make 5% of contributions, which is interesting. And, of course, the big dig at Canonical. Canonical make around a single percent of contribution, which is less than Nokia, Sun, Fluendo, Intel, and just a little bit higher than Mandriva. So make of that what you will. I'm very surprised, considering they seem to do so much work.
You're surprised?
Yeah. Yeah, because I've never looked at it, but Canonical, Ubuntu is the GNOME desktop, you know.
But they have, Red Hat has 9 times the employees of Canonical.
But GNOME isn't as important to Red Hat as Ubuntu is.
Yeah.
And it's not as if Ubuntu couldn't...
Ubuntu's more important to Red Hat than...
It's not as if Ubuntu couldn't hire extra people to work on GNOME if they wanted to. They choose not to.
We've already talked about Canonical's notification system, you know, running in Ubuntu. And these kind of things are visible and usable, and this is something that I thought Canonical had an emphasis on, changing GNOME. But in fact, they don't change GNOME at all. They just change the pixels and the colours.
Just moving the menu buttons from one side of a window to another count as a contribution?
No, yeah, that's the problem here. If it was counted like that, maybe Canonical would win.
But the problem is you're already buying into the idea that the only contribution that's important is a code contribution.
That's true. That's all this survey's about, though.
Yeah, so it's a bit lame, isn't it? Poor old Canonical doing all they can to hand out GNOME CDs free of charge to the world.
Not GNOME CDs. our flavour of GNOME, yeah.
Yeah, it must count for a lot, surely.
It does count for a lot. And
software development, you know, only adds up to 18% of the cost of a full project.
I think Ubuntu is great. I'm just saying I'm surprised that it's 0.4% more than Mandriva, and I couldn't tell you what Mandriva have done to the GNOME desktop. Didn't even know you could install it on Mandriva.
Well, the other thing is that Red Hat has a small history, according to some conspiracy theorists, of rejecting contributions because they have the majority of people developing GNOME.
Yeah, yeah.
So things like XGL was made by Novell. it was rewritten from scratch by the Red Hat employees AIGLX. Sadly, slower than XGL. with the end result being that, oh, Red Hat contributed thousands of lines of code and Vel contributed zero.
Yeah.
In that particular case, they kicked it out, which is a bit sad, really. Or Novell's GNOME menu. Novell has their own custom GNOME menu. They submitted for inclusion, rejected. Must use the original one. So Novell could contribute far more.
Yeah, it's an interesting discussion. And I didn't read up about this at all, but last on our news items is Mark Shuttleworth hates tribalism, apparently. What's that to do with?
There's a good quote here. Tribalism is when one group of people start to think people from another group are wrong by default, says Shuttleworth, and he's referring specifically to distro people, but also generally for the free software movement. And he went on to say, right now, for a number of reasons, there is a fever pitch of tribalism in plain sight in the free software world. It's sad. It's not constructive. It's ultimately going to be embarrassing for the people involved because the internet doesn't forget. It's certainly not helping us lift free software to the forefront of public expectations of what software can be.
I think of tribalism as people of a like mind getting together to provide safety, you know, coming together in a small village so that they can keep themselves protected from the wolves.
Lions.
Yeah, the wolves and lions. So in that kind of definition of tribalism, there's a gnome tribe that are protecting themselves from the encroachment of KDE over the other side of the valley.
Well, once you've hunted the wolves to extinction, the threat is the people in the next valley.
Yeah, yeah. And then you assimilate them, and then it becomes the next county. then the next country.
Yes, yeah, so that is perhaps general behaviour. We'd like to think in the free software movement that doesn't happen, right?
Of course not. We're all above that.
We're all working together, pulling in the same direction.
Much nicer people.
Yeah, but that's not the case. And we see this all the time on the Linux one, don't we?
Letters. Yes, we do.
We get lots of letters.
What do they say,
Andrew?
They say, "Why do you give so much coverage to Ubuntu? I hate Ubuntu. Write about X distro more. Why do you have a vendetta against X distro?
You must be paid for by Microsoft."
Where X distro is routinely not one of the big five. Yeah. Why don't you write more about Linux Mint or PC Linux OS or something else?
Careful, you're opening us up to flames.
Mint is in the top five now. So that's the news.
Now it's time for You Dare Us, which is really, really short this time.
We've all done it too.
Because we've all done it.
Except for Mike.
Oh my.
Mike's so rubbish.
So it was the challenge that we set ourselves last fortnight, and that was to be positive.
In the podcast.
Yes, that was a chap called Mihaly, was it?
No, it was edited out, I think. Mihai. My wife is Hungarian. No. He's Hungarian name. Mihai.
I left it in.
Okay.
We must have missed that bit then. Mihai.
We did have a lot. I left the whole embarrassing discussion in because it was all making me look incredibly stupid. It was quite funny.
Well, keep this in there. It doesn't make me look the cleverest. Mihai. Thank you, Mihai. And I think we performed your task with aplomb. So to all those people who...
Wasn't complaints, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Why were people complaining?
Sickeningly positive.
See, what I'd like is for everyone who complains about the podcast to give their money back.
Yes, that's true. Send your money back in an envelope.
We should counter out. Just please everyone to get the full spectrum of people. We should do a next podcast completely negatively.
Or we could go back to being positive about some things and negative about some other things.
What, an imbalance?
Yeah, like we were before.
Yes, well, it looks like we are.
So that was last time then.
That was last time.
2 weeks of freedom.
2 weeks of basically thinking about how awesome our next challenge is going to be.
Right. How awesome is it, Andrew?
It's I think it's about a 9.5 on the awesomosity scale.
This is awesome.
Yeah. It's we're challenging ourselves to to play NetHack for 2 weeks.
Yep.
NetHack, good, sounds good.
I don't know what NetHack is.
What NetHack is. Graham, why don't you debrief him?
You will do in 2 weeks' time.
Yeah.
It's, it started off as a console-based RPG, so it's a top down is the loosest kind of possible term, because the original version was all built out of characters, you know, letters on the keyboard printed onto the screen.
You're an at symbol, for example.
Yeah, you walk around the dungeon and you build up stats and you kill things and you explore and you go down and down and down until you become super awesome and can defeat everything.
Well, you ascend. The idea is to find the Amulet of Yendor, at which point you become immortal. That's the point. But the people who make it, the dev team, put a number of problems in your way that are ridiculously sneaky and will annoy you no end. There are many ways to die, and you will encounter most of them in the next 2 weeks. And in fact, there's probably very little chance any of us will ascend, i.e. finish the game, in 2 weeks.
Yes.
Probably nil chance. So we'll just see what level we get onto. You go deeper and deeper, basically, into the dungeons until you win.
Well, that sounds great.
It does sound great. It's really, really hard, though, because the ways you can die become more and more and more complex, as you'll find out.
So this is what I'll be doing with my week off next week.
Yeah.
Sitting in a darkened room with the blazing sunshine outside, looking for the Amulet of Yendor.
Yeah, if you get any levels down at all, I'll be very surprised. So we'll see.
It is quite addictive.
It is, yeah, because the ways you die are funny.
There are lots of different versions, and they look very cool now, not like that old. Are we going to agree on a specific version to play?
No, that's actually part of the fun, isn't it? Which version did you play?
Okay.
You should write down the way you die, the ways you die.
Okay.
What kills you? That'd be funny.
That sounds great.
Okay, the Chronicle of a Death foretold many times over in the next fortnight. I look forward to it.
And with such dark portends, we come to the halfway point of our podcast. Still to come, we have the discovery of the week, where we all share our weekly discoveries. And, of course, our In the Hot Seat section, this time with Graham Morrison, and our open ballot. What one thing would you change about Linux? And by Linux, we mean Linux distros, you fools.
Okay, it's time for the discovery of the week, which in my case is a rediscovery of the week. I'm not going to ask you to first. I'm just going to pile right in. XFCE, it's great.
Thanks, Mike.
Yeah,
it is. Well, nice. You know, someone has to keep the end up. I was using VirtualBox the other day, and my machine couldn't handle it. It couldn't handle the truth with running GNOME and another GNOME system inside VirtualBox. It just couldn't take it. It kept crashing over and over again. So I booted into XFCE, and everything worked. It's cool. It uses less RAM.
It is good.
It's got a nice logo.
You barely notice that you're not using GNOME, really.
No, you don't.
Well, to be fair, it does use GTK. So, what I don't get is, how does it use less RAM? Because they've basically killed libgnome, haven't they? That's been mostly migrated into GTK.
Yeah.
So what exactly is GNOME doing to make it so slow?
Maybe Thunar makes the difference. Maybe that's what it is.
What's Nautilus?
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah, well, Thunar can't do things like the wonderful connector server thing in GNOME Nautilus, where you can say connect to this SFTP share or whatever.
The thing that never works.
Really?
Well, it does work, okay. It does work. But it's vague. I find that a very vague interface. I don't like that on OS X. I don't like it on GNOME.
Doesn't work in OS X. You can't connect to SFTP in OS X, can you?
No, I don't know.
Nautilus is superior.
Yeah, okay.
So there we go. That's the best discovery of this fortnight. What other inferior things have you two found?
Yeah, Graham.
Mine is it's actually for Windows.
Alright. Okay, on to mine then.
So this is why you rolled up in that gold-plated Bentley this morning, isn't it?
Thanks, Bill. It's not Bill, Steve. Mine is called GNU on Windows, and it's basically a low-resource replacement for Cygwin. If anyone has used Cygwin, it's a terrible, terrible piece of software. It basically installs a very basic GNU/Linux environment on your Windows system so that you can get to things like a shell. Now, GNU on Windows does a very similar thing, but it's 10 meg. It's a Windows executable. And it installs about 130 really brilliant Linux tools that you use every day on Linux. So if you have to use Windows for whatever reason, GNU on Windows is brilliant. For example, you get grep, bash, cat, curl, CVS, gawk, less, vi, vim, sftp, scp, sed, wget, and ncftp, which is really cool, diff, zsh as well. All of these things in a 10 meg package that can make Windows a lot easier to bear if you have to use it for some reason because you're troubleshooting your mother's laptop. That's it.
That's pretty good. My discovery was brought on because Graham and I went to OSCON last week. Wait, last week? Week before?
It was the week before, yeah. Gosh, we got back at the beginning.
It was so sunny and nice. Anyway, I went to OSCON and I went to an awesome tutorial talk there by some of the team who work on jQuery. I've never used jQuery before. It's a JavaScript library for doing neat things with web pages very, very quickly. And amazingly, what it lets you do is do neat things with web pages very, very quickly. It really does. It does the things I do so very, very often, typing out long commands. It does it in one very, very short line. So I'm going to be using jQuery from now on in every one of my web projects because it's just so very, very impressive. I think the tutorial notes for that are online. If they are, you'll find them in the podcast notes, such as they are, because you should really read it, because I was just blown away about how easy it was. But there was one pro tip in there, which I think is probably obvious to anyone who really takes the web seriously, which is not me, which I had never realized before, which is obviously jQuery is a big JavaScript library. You have to import it using the SRC attribute in your JavaScript code. And when you do so, usually if it get your web browser gets angry because if you're in a secure connection and the jQuery is in an insecure connection, it'll go, hey, you're loading insecure code, you shouldn't want to do that. Or flip way around, it'll say, you're trying to load some secure code, is that okay? What you can do is, when you're specifying a library, you can say src equals, quote, slash slash, the rest of the URL. Miss off the HTTP colon slash, or HTTPS colon. And the browser figures it out automatically and knows it just connects whichever way you're using right now. So you get jQuery on your web pages with no complaints. That was my discovery.
Oh, that's very good.
Yeah, it's a simple little tip, but it happens a lot.
So just HTTP kind of infers that it's online somewhere, or
there's just if you miss out the HTTP colon bit, it figures it out based on the current connection on the web page you're on.
Right.
It uses the same connection for the script.
Yes, right. Yeah.
So it uses HTTPS if it has to, basically. Yeah, it's neat. But hopefully we can find the full notes because it was a really great tutorial. I'm a jQuery convert now.
Will they be in the podcast notes?
I think I said they would be, didn't I?
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You just have to say it and it makes it so.
God, that's awesome. Those podcast note fairies are the best.
And now it's time for our In the Hot Seat section, which is this week done by Graham, who currently has no idea what he's covering.
No, this is still true.
So this time, in our current plan, we're still trying to evolve and find the right way to just choose our topics. We've written out a vast variety of things on bits of paper of card. Well, okay, paper, to be fair. lots of different names. So right now we have on there the new KDE 4.5, which was released today.
Yesterday.
yesterday, that's true. Women in open source, Gen 2, Slackware, and of course Grub.
Grub's still on there.
Grub's on there quite a few times now because we really want to see Grub. So what we're going to do is...
Why's GIMP still on there? We did that last time.
Yeah, you're right.
Okay, fair enough. No more GIMP. That was Python last time, wasn't it?
That was me because it was GIMP.
Oh, of course. Sorry, I just remember that Python rant that went wrong. Anyway, so I am simply going to tap along and say some words and the one it ends on is the one you're going to do. How's that sound?
Okay, sure. Yeah, go for it.
So, eeny, meeny, miny, moe. Catch a Linux user by the toe. If he says, hey, I'm compiling stuff, it's probably a Gentoo user, therefore you are doing Migo.
Migo.
Migo. Well, that's all right, because Migo is quite funny.
That's fine. I'm glad it's not the Totally Be Positive podcast.
We haven't started the time yet, Graham. All right, so you know the rules. You have exactly 1 minute non-stop to talk about the subject of Migo. I'll let you throw into MIMO if you want to. Are you ready?
Hold on. Okay.
We still have no squeaky ball. We now have a squeaky Andrew. He'll do. Are you ready?
Okay, go.
Go.
Right, Migo is the unholy alliance between Intel and Nokia. The two are losing at the mobile game and the mobile desktop operating system game, so they both form an amalgam of the two losing strategies into Migo, which is what was previously Moblin, which was a very poorly received netbook-based UI, with MIMO, which was very poorly received Nokia UI for mobile phones, and the result is Migo, that doesn't actually go anywhere. It's this... it's basically still two operating systems. Moblin has its advantages. It's quite nice and smooth, but it's not as good as alternatives. Mego, we actually saw it running on a mobile phone at OSCON. It was dreadful, and nothing like the desktop experience. I have no idea where the two are supposed to overlap, because there doesn't seem to be any convergence of ideas. And I think I could probably go on about this for a long, long time, but what they do have to do is they have to create UI guidelines and an app store for everyone.
Very impressive. I think we could all see where it was going after the first five seconds. Unholy alliance. I hope you're listening, Intel, because I agree with everything he just said, plus one. He's absolutely right. What a waste of time.
Is this why Michael Meeks didn't write his last column for us?
The rage.
Because he hates you.
Yeah, maybe. I went to a talk with Michael talking about how great Mego was. He did a good job of trying to sell it. But,
And without further ado, because it's almost pub o'clock, let's go right onwards to our open ballot, in which we ask the question, what one thing would you change about Linux? We gave you some ideas. The ideas were awesome things such as, would you merge KDE and GNOME? Would you introduce a new package manager? Would you find all mentions of Linux and replace it with GNU Linux? We have got lots of answers, many angry answers. But that's good, because it generates some discussion. The first one was so good, we had to put it on Identica/Twitter straight away, because it was that awesome, from Daz Fuller. He said, if I could just change one thing, it would be to do away with all the petty bickering and infighting. For a community who values choice so highly, we really do turn into a bunch of whiny gits when people do things a different way. I think that deserves a round of applause. Daz Fuller, you are absolutely right. You are absolutely right. I think we all agree with you here.
And then, is it to prove his point?
Well, let's cover the full spectrum of discussions here. Xavier said, I would force all mainstream Linux distros to use a GUI.
Mm. Do they not use GUIs already? Like, SUSE uses a GUI.
Yeah, he's right, yeah. Well, I think that...
Does he mean one GUI?
No, I think he means that some things require the command line still. With SUSE perhaps being the exception, because Yast does have Yast option for does. Everything if you can find it. So I've actually already sort of put words into your mouth, guys. What do you actually think about this? What would your one change be?
Well, if it was to be put into a word, it would be Unity. But I think if it was an actual project, I'd merge GNOME and KDE. I think having two desktops... I understand why I used to, but I think it's counterproductive. I think I've said it before, but it confuses everyone. It would be great. Maybe we need a new desktop. If it's mostly GNOME and less KDE, fine, but that's what I'd change.
When you say merge KDE and GNOME...
Yeah, that's a political word.
Is it like the suggested British football team, which would be basically England plus Ryan Giggs?
Well, I think... I like Qt applications. I like, you know, I don't mind KDE. I like KDE. I use KDE. But I just think that having two desktops is counterproductive. And so if it's a GNOME GDK based desktop that Qt applications have to adhere to in terms of their design and in terms of their widgets and how menus are laid out and things like that, I think that would be better. KDE applications like Amarok running on GNOME would be fine, and I think there should just be one desktop.
Okay, with that, let's go back to some of the comments. We've had some very, very good ones. Sadly, Anonymous Penguin, all the craziness about my distro is better than yours, and attacking other distros probably makes us weaker than we really are. Absolutely true. Tarpan says, if Linux is to become a real alternative for Windows, there has to be a way to motivate game manufacturers to produce Linux versions of their products. How to do it? That's $1 million question. I think it's already happening, isn't it, really? Thanks.
Well, I think now that we see StarCraft 2 available on OS X day one,
yeah.
And I don't think it's going to take much effort over and above a Mac port to create a Linux port.
Well, I'm actually thinking, rather than things like Wine, we should be looking at things like Mac compatibility. I don't mean an actual Wine-like system. I mean, go through all the libraries that they're likely to use on Mac OS X, like SDL, which we already have, or OpenGL, we already have, and make sure they all work flawlessly on Linux in the same sort of way. So almost a recompile would work.
Yeah.
That'd be pretty awesome. So if it's all in a Mac version, hey, the Linux version is free. Why not?
Yeah.
We've got some more here. We have Beatard, which is possibly the best name so far. I would pass a law making sensible defaults sensible. Every reduction in features or customization should come with an advanced tab. Another anonymous penguin. I'm not going to answer that. You should just get a man name. Don't use anonymous penguin, lads. Stephen Michael Kellat says, I would make LXDE the default Linux desktop environment. It remains a favoured, speedy alternative to XFCE and GNOME for lightweight functionality. There you go. You thought XFCE was fast. LXDE. We have Emptux saying, Linux currently lacks functioning sleep hibernate almost all the time. I'll get this fixed, as it's especially frustrating on laptops.
Yeah, at work, Moblin did that very well.
There you go.
It did.
There are some good things.
Yeah.
And then we have Michael, who says, I hate this kind of question. What would I change about Linux? Nothing. Linux is the kernel and the core operating environment. Linux is not KDE, LXDE, GNOME, or other such. I would change how people refer to Linux as being a distribution of some sort. Then we have one final change from Anonymous Penguinette. I'd remove Michael, the flamer from above, from contact with normal people. Absolutely true. Andrew, what do you think?
I second Anonymous Penguinette. I think the thing that bugs me really is the two package managers, the two package systems, Debs and RPMs. I'd just get rid of RPMs.
Yeah, yeah.
And millions of Red Hat users scream. They hear you say that.
Well, that's fine. None of them are in this room.
It's not about that. Yeah. I think it's a unified front. You know, Fedora can carry on. RPM can carry on. LXD can carry on. It's just that there should be, you know, we've talked about it before, a standard base, which is what you'd expect Linux to be.
We've got loads of standard bases.
Yeah, we've got loads of standard bases. Using RPM.
Yeah.
That's the great thing about standards, really, isn't it? There's lots to choose from. We have some more answers. In fact, some agree with you, Andrew, which is a bit strange.
Ook.
We have one here from Cornelix, I think that's how you pronounce it, who wants to stop diversification. Well, gratuitous diversification, he called it, which is some of the gurus behind the many Linux distros who make their systems almost compatible with each other, with almost being in quotes, because it's absolutely true. The problem is that they are 95% compatible. It's basically incompatible. And he goes on to say that the main problem is a package format. There isn't a single package format which makes distributing software, particularly for us. We do cover disks every month. Poor old Mike, who isn't here. Haha, Mike. has to try and distribute software in RPM and Deb and Tarball and you name it format, which is a pain in the neck, poor old Mike. And makes our life very, very hard. We have one here from Biggles1000 who says, I would remove Grub forever. He goes and say all sorts of things, but really, he just moved up forever, quite frankly. That's all.
How would you boot Linux then? Would you
go back to Lilo?
Lilo. Chameleon.
Lilo was good. I would make it closed source and only accessible by really excellent developers.
Most excellent.
says Alison. Which is interesting. Mel says, the way Linux handles sound is pure crap. Outputting sound video through HDMI sucks even more. That's absolutely true. Freecode says, learn to work together without the pettiness. If we are an open source community, come together as a community and learn to get along. I really find the antisocial immaturity way too much. True. Yeah, absolutely true. Jono says, when I first heard the name a few years ago, I thought, OMG, sounds hard. I'm not even going to go near it. A year later, he tried out Ubuntu on some inferior magazine disc and decided to try it out. And
now talks in acronyms.
Has used Linux ever since.
Is that Jono Bacon?
Hard to be sure. Jono is such a cool name. It's hard to be sure. Some people, Sean B wants to have good USB support. That's good. Angie wants to have Linux on new installed PCs. Dave S. wants to slow down the frequency of distro release cycles to allow devs a chance to refine each release a little bit more. Is that even possible?
It's possible for Debian.
To go even slower. No, it's not. It's not possible.
Well, it's possible
going
for
reverse.
GNOME, the GNOME 3.0 chaps, they're doing exactly that.
Ah.
And when we lauded them for it just earlier.
Yes. The Z-Man says, or the Z-Man, he's from North Carolina, says, all these things are great things and would have an impact, but I believe that I would change only one thing, and that is that this is an operating system for nerds. Not quite sure where he's going with that.
Well, it shouldn't be an operating system for nerds.
Andrew McComb says, I think GNU Linux is ready for the mainstream now! I'd love to see a full-scale media campaign involving advertising in non-computer magazines. That's very interesting. Perhaps we could do that in the future. The Knitter.
Well, we could get, you know, I'm not going to go there. No, stop.
Yeah, Knitter and knitting magazines.
Yes. Not Mike says, get rid of it and replace it with macOS. Yeah, thanks, Mike. Or a kernel that just runs KOSE, whichever which is the more useful, which I fear is a kernel that just runs KOSE. All I want, says Ray Woods, is a system that just works and that anybody, regardless of their geek status, can use. That's true. There are some issues perhaps holding people back. Mark Castle says, convince Adobe to release native versions of Photoshop. How do you convince Adobe to do that?
By them kidnap flowers. The CEO's children.
Yeah, that was Graham. FBI. Grimly Penguin says, forget the need to become a mainstream OS. It seems like a lot of people think that Linux needs to supplant Windows and or Mac OS. Why? The lack of a market share is a huge reason why Linux, Solaris and BSD are so free of viruses, spyware, etc., which is somewhat controversial, you might say. David Brown. This is a good idea, actually. This is actually one thing Mike loves. I would like a distro with no shared code, with each program completely self-contained in its folder and subfolders. No dependencies, no DLL hell, to use a term from Windows. Drive space is cheap today and will be cheaper tomorrow. Is that even possible?
Well, yes, it's possible. I don't know quite how much space it would take up or the efficiency of the system if everything's loading its separate version of the same library.
Doesn't Haiku or one of Mike's favourite OSs work like that?
I think it has individual folders for applications in the same way that Mac OS X does. But even Mac OS X does let you link libraries and does rely on a number of linked libraries for very, very standard common things like Cocoa, for example, or you know SDL, I guess, is a linkable library. Actually, no, it's not. SDL isn't a linkable library. You bundle that with the application. But the many, 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 many are, like libxml. You have to rely on these. So they've got a different position on the slider of dependencies. The further down, there are fewer dependencies, but still not all the way down to zero. Then there's a huge flame war, which I will skip over. And what it comes down to, there's one I couldn't even find in my huge printout of answers, because we're still using paper here, is a good one about stop using silly names for software.
What silly names?
What was Mike's Lib Gwen Pouvoir? This is an important point. I think it comes down to the fact that, you know, on Mac OS X, the mail program is called mail. Because there's only one of them. Imagine if there was, you know, 15, 20 Linux mail clients, which there are, and they're all called mail. Basically, you run out of names. So you end up with evolution, which gives you no clue as to what it does. So I can see why we're stuck with this problem, and I think it's actually a problem of open source.
Well, Entourage doesn't give you a clue what it does.
No, or Outlook. Outlook bad. Yes, got no idea. Well, that obviously that's had a few versions. They released, what was the previous version before Outlook in 97? Outlook isn't the first mail client they had one before that, which had a more obvious name.
Oh yeah, it came with Office, didn't it?
Yeah, it did, and it was rubbish. Well, not on Outlook or Entourage or any better. But yeah, so they've had the same problem. They've had to replace it with new software. And I think Entourage has a different name because it's completely different software. It's the Mac version of Outlook, basically, but it's written from scratch.
But you see, with Apple, it's the marketing department that they'll choose the name of the applications.
Yeah.
You see, if there was a Linux standard that had the same levels of binary libraries for every single release and chose a single application, we'd be able to do that.
Yeah.
They could market.
But at least KMail, because there aren't many KDE mail applications, they can call themselves KMail and get away with it. And as long as you're a KDE user, you can handle it.
Yeah, yeah. I don't mind evolution, you know. It falls down the Microsoft kind of hole.
Yeah, it's an okay name, but, you know, cheese.
There are some silly names. GIMP is silly.
G-Scrot.
We've all got used to it.
G-Scrot is possibly the worst name ever, isn't it?
I think that's my favourite.
Well, fortunately, it's gone now, isn't it? In place of Shutter, which Shutter follows the same line of thinking as the app I mentioned a minute ago, which I've forgotten. Cheese. In that, you know, say cheese. Hey, it's a camera application. Yeah. Shutter. It's a camera application, right? It has a hint of what it's doing, which is actually quite good.
It's a bad idea for a different distribution, or at least an Ubuntu respin, where every application is simply renamed exactly what it does.
Isn't that an option in the menu system?
Yeah, I mean, the menus do it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's inconsistent once you start loading
it. You get the splash screen.
GIMP. Yeah, yeah.
Why is there a strange prairie dog in a balloon on my splash screen for this thing? You know. Yeah, photo edit. Yeah, paint.
Mail. Contacts.
This is a very exciting discussion. Will it end?
Let's do it. Let's make it happen.
Let's do it. And I think
we too could reach number 272 in the DistroWatch rankings.
And have some other poor gits using our distro in a challenge on their podcast. And with such exciting distro forking discussion, we come to the end of our podcast for another week. But never fear, Mike is back for the next one.
Yay!
I think so.
He will be back, yeah.
There you go. Mike will be back for the next one. In fact, Mike is probably approaching Bath. That's where we are. XF Towers. Right now! Mike is approaching the city right now, full of stuff from Germany, like sausages and leather trousers. So, with that, we come to the end of our podcast. See the notes on our website for more information and hopefully some jQuery tutorial linkage. We'll find out. And we are off to drink and then die in NetHack.
Cool.
Good luck. See you in 2 weeks. Bye.
Bye.
Mike is full of leather trousers.